Hello and welcome to Last Time On. This is the podcast for people who want to watch all this prestige television, but who's got time for it?
You know I don't.
Anubis, Apophis, O'Neill in my office, the Tok'ra, the Jaffa, give me that Naquadra. Off-world activation gives me hesitation. Where did Jonas go? We're in prison again, oh no.
You know, you posted a meme with like a third of that,
yeah,
like yesterday, I think. And I'm like, I wonder if he's going to do anything with that.
It came to me last night, like right before I was going to go to bed, which is when most of my stupid ideas come to me. And like I posted it so I wouldn't forget it. And then I came up with the rest on the way to pick up my breakfast burrito this morning. So
solid. That was good.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, and that is Jafar.
Yes, I'm Jafar.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Victor.
And what we do here on Last Time On is we've picked a show that none of us have seen. We watch the pilot, we roll some dice, we skip that many episodes, and then we try to figure out what exactly happened here. And sometimes we figure out Wahapahar in between those episodes, blazing our way through prestige television at a rate that is acceptable to us.
This is the new way everyone is going to watch television in the future. I'm telling you guys, we are in the ground floor here of the next generation of television media consumption.
When Netflix adds a skip random episodes feature, we'll know it's because of us.
Yep, we are going to be swimming in royalties from that Netflix skip random episode feature.
I should probably
call the patent office.
If you want to watch a show while missing most of the show, this is how you do it.
So, we're going through Stargate SG-1. If you're just joining us for the first time, how appropriate that you pick up this podcast on a random episode. But we are on our 11th episode of Stargate SG-1, and we are watching Season 8, Episode 12, Prometheus Unbound.
Yeah.
The smuttiest sounding episode title yet.
I mean, given one of the guest stars of this episode is just horny on main all over the place.
That's very appropriate, yeah.
For sure. But before we do that, we have been working our way through the cast of the show, doing some recasting with its recent acquisition from Amazon. There are talks about a SG-1 reboot, or at the very least, some new Stargate media.
Stargate something.
Maybe a reboot, maybe not, TBD. But we've been recasting the cast for fun, and we're going to continue that today with Jonas.
Awesome. Well, since I insisted on this one, I'll go ahead and throw my pick out there. Since we don't know much about Jonas other than he's just a random dollar store Daniel Jackson that we get for about a season and a half, I'm going to say my pick is going to be Jensen Eccles for our new Jonas. Seems good to me. I mean, come on, he's really not doing anything these days after Supernatural ended, so it'll be good to give him something to do.
I mean, he came in for a season of The Boys.
He did, yeah. And it's funny, on IMDb
for an episode too.
He was who?
In Gen V, which is the spinoff show.
Oh, right, yeah, I haven't watched it yet, yeah.
It's good.
That's funny, his IMDb photo is his character from The Boys.
Yeah, okay. Do you have anything else you want to say about that, or should we move on?
Moving on.
Yeah. It's Jonas. We don't need to spend a lot of time on him. We shouldn't spend a lot of time on him, actually. I wanted someone who kind of looked like Jonas, because Jonas kind of looks like he has an air of someone who's on the inside of the joke, but also is the joke. And when I think of someone who has a face that tells me that, I think of Mark Duplass.
That's a great pick.
Most famously of The League,
yep.
Probably.
Well, and
but all kinds of stuff. Yeah, he's gotten into filmmaking. He has a production company with his brother. They've done a ton of really good stuff. Totally worth your time. But also, like, yep, just he'll always be Pete from The League to me,
yeah.
No matter what he's doing.
It is decided.
Oh, it's his brother Jay Duplass?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I get had it mixed up. I was going to say I loved him in the independent sci-fi movie Prospect. It's an excellent movie, but it's the wrong Duplass. So.
Wrong Duplass.
Are they interchangeable? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I know we need to have, I'm guessing, some sort of cooking show where the Duplasses, the Russos, and the Wachowskis, like...
They've got nice. Gordon Ramsay yelling at them.
Oh, I would pay money for that.
Okay. Ben.
Well, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I saw Jonas, and I was like, I want to make him more distinct. I don't want, hey, we're just getting somebody who's enough like Daniel Jackson that when they're, you know, when you're watching reruns for, you know, they didn't have to change the writing. Like, it's a, you know, slot one guy out, slot one guy in. I want to put somebody in where it's different, where it's going to change up the dynamics, hopefully make the writing a little bit more interesting. So I decided to go with an actor I really, really love, Nick Terabay. Nick Terabay, you might know him. He was Asher in the Spartacus TV series. He was Captain Boomerang in the Arrowverse.
Oh,
Vic,
okay.
You will know him as Kochiar from The Expanse.
The Expanse, yes. I loved him in The Expanse. Loved him in Spartacus.
Yeah.
He was excellent.
He's an actor I really, really like, and I like seeing him in stuff. And I think just picking a guy who's going to bring something different than our recasted versions of Dr. Jackson.
You know, that is actually a really good pick, because technically Jonas betrays the Collodians, and Asher, you know, he always betrays you.
Yeah, that's true.
there was even a betrayal with his Expanse character, no spoilers, but yeah, it was just like, oh man, he is the best betrayer in Hollywood. That guy.
All right.
And speaking of recastings, I'm checking the lab results of our previous recast of Dr. Frasier, and it looks like Linda Cardellini. Did I get that right this time?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Yes. I finally know how to say words. She is the fan favorite pick. It looks like 9 votes for her. Jafar and I are tied each with our picks at 3. So yeah.
That's
all right,
strong lead, Ben.
You win this week, even though we're not competing, but you win.
People like Velma. What can I say?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Works for me.
All right. With all of that, you guys want to get into this episode?
Let's dive right
in. Do we have
to? Prometheus Unbound. I loved this episode. It was so different than what we're used to.
You mean it was an episode of Star Trek?
I like Star Trek.
This did feel like it could have just been an episode of Discovery to me. To be perfectly honest,
mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a little hornier than Discovery.
In a good
Discovery.
And bad way.
It's about the same.
Okay. It's
Strange New Worlds. It's as horny as Strange New Worlds.
That makes more sense.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, we got season 8, episode 12, Prometheus Unbound. We open on DJ and Jack arguing about a mission when we learn that last time on, both Jack and General Hammond have been promoted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack has Hammond's job, and Hammond is doing something in D.C. now. Jack is a brigadier general, which is a 1-star general. Mm-hmm. And Hammond is now a lieutenant general, which is a 3-star general.
Wow. I don't even have that memorized.
I wrote it down. You can count the number of stars on their uniforms.
Look, I'm not... Okay, pro tip. Look, I have a lot of deficiencies, and counting is one of them. All right. So
it also helps that the nameplate is on the door behind O'Neill that says Briggen.
Yes.
O'Neill.
Yeah.
But yes, Daniel is demanding to go on a mission. O'Neill is like, no, I need you here. And he's like, but I'm the only one on the planet who can do it. And he's like, yeah. And that's why if you go out into space and die, no one can replace you, which kind of makes sense. But we don't know what the mission is. We know it's some sort of rescue mission at this point. But it seems that some stuff has really, really changed. They start mentioning Atlantis. They start saying that they've lost contact with the team. I did not realize Atlantis was happening at the same time as SG-1. I think I mentioned that last time. So it looks like they're trying to cross over without crossing over. I like it when our shows reference each other. Like when Riker calls up Quark on TNG.
Oh, that was great.
It's just like, hey, you owe me money.
You were correct. It's fact.
Voyager and DS9 ran concurrently for a little while, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so TNG and DS9 ran concurrently for
two seasons?
Two and a half.
And then Voyager and DS9 ran concurrently for the remainder of DS9.
Yeah, and Doctor Who and the new era of Doctor Who has a ton of spinoffs that all run concurrently as well, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, there was Torchwood and Sarah Jane Smith Adventures, and then there was one with kids in a school or something. I think so.
That sounds familiar. Anyway.
Yeah, so...
go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I was just going to say, Jack is overridden by the general here. For the exact reason. And DJ, he's taking DJ with him to Atlantis. And he is also taking Walter.
Yeah.
Who we find is in charge of SG-3 later in the episode.
We do?
Yeah, that's SG-3.
I thought Walter was the Corwin lookalike guy.
Oh, you're talking about Harriman.
Yeah.
Sergeant Harriman. No, I think Harriman is just with Hammond.
I could have sworn that's who he was taken with.
Yeah. I think
it's like we finally get a name for the guy.
Yeah. Well, he's had a name.
Hammond and DJ talk a bit, and we get a little bit of catch up here. The general led a space battle against Anubis.
Yes.
From this ship. That sounds like a season finale to me, baby.
Yeah. But he also took the chair.
Yes. He literally takes his chair back. You can requisition a new one.
Yes. It's lovely. So they talk about the Atlantis bit. I'm guessing this is for people who don't watch Atlantis. There is a Antarctica outpost.
Yes.
That was a one-way trip. The team has been unheard of. The ship they're on has an Asgardian faster-than-light system.
Yeah,
and a distress call comes in, and they go to investigate.
Yeah, we also find out here that Hammond is the head of Homeworld Security, which tells me they finally bit the bullet and told everybody, hey, guys, there's aliens. There's Stargates, two of them at least, and we're building spaceships now. So we got bigger problems. I don't care about your tariffs and such. We've got to worry about alien lasers.
So you think they're running ads now for recruiting campaigns for, like, join the Department of Homeworld Security, you know, great benefits.
Go into space and blow up.
Star Trek Delta on a recruitment poster, and you're like, oh yeah, they did that, didn't they? We get some throwaway numbers here, and if you are not a first-time listener, if you listen to this podcast in its entirety, or listen to me over on Who Are You? A Babylon 5 Watchcast, you know. If you watched this episode, then you knew this was going to happen. When they throw numbers out, I do some math. So, gentlemen, I did the math.
Recalculating.
The distress call is 50 light years away, and they can get there in 20 minutes.
That to seem now, real fast.
Now, assuming that is an exact measurement, which it is not, because the scale of those numbers is too large and too small for it to be exact.
That just makes no fucking sense.
This is 1,314,900 times the speed of light.
What?
Is how fast this ship is going right now.
Holy shit.
How does that relate to warp?
I converted this to the... I did the math.
You
so
did.
In the TOS warp scale... This is warp 109.55, and in the TNG warp scale, it is warp 9.999994. And actually, that's not, base 10 is not precise enough at this scale for me to get the actual number. We need to move on to, I want to say, base 16 to get precise enough.
Christ.
To get the actual measurement.
How does that even work?
Base 16? You count to 16
before you get to 10. No, I understand how base 16 work, but how is that more accurate than base 10? Ah!
Right? It's base 10 is not accurate enough.
Stop! My head is hurting.
Is because the scale is so tight. If Voyager's seven-year journey done at this speed, they would have left the caretaker and been home before the end of the second episode in real time. It would have been a 46 2/3 hour trip at warp.
Good lord.
Well, they are going between galaxies, so I appreciate that this destroys the speed of Star Trek, but it also is the only way you can make it work for, I'm going from here to, I believe they say they're going to the Pegasus galaxy. And the only way to travel between galaxies is to go at just astronomical speeds.
I should have looked how far away the Pegasus Galaxy actually is, because it's not the closest galaxy. No. The closest galaxy to the Milky Way is the Andromeda Galaxy. Yeah. But I guess I didn't bother with that. Only math, no astronomy. I did pull out my Voyager mug for recording this episode, though, in tribute to all of the math I did.
I was going to say, at the beginning of the episode, they mentioned that they hadn't left the Milky Way yet.
And, yeah.
And to me, that just seemed, just with that little piece of information, if it's been a day or two or however long it's been.
It could have been about a day and a half, 2 days, depending on where the off-courseness of it is.
But if it takes them that long and they haven't even left the Milky Way, the distance between galaxies is exponentially bigger than so it's like, dude, it's maybe so, they're accelerating. I don't know.
I've got two things with this.
Yeah.
One, if it takes you 3 days to get out of the Milky Way, the trip to get to another galaxy, you're still measuring in under a year.
Okay.
Abouts, probably, depending on which galaxy and how far away it actually is. But what I actually think is happening, if there's any real science behind this at all, is you would have to have some kind of speed limiter on in a galaxy because there's too much shit. There's too many asteroids and planets and things to dodge around to go any faster.
And then once you're in between galaxies, you just open it up like you hit the highway.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, they're on the highway.
Okay.
So this 50 light years in 20 minutes, that's suburbs driving for them right now. And when they get out of the galaxy, they can get on the expressway. Okay.
Suddenly,
red shifts and blue shifts start flashing behind them. Now, son, do you understand why I pulled you over here? You're going warp 9.999999 in a 99998 zone. So I'm going to need to see your spaceship license and registration, please.
Ticket. Nice.
We also meet Dr. Novak here, and I will admit, she is weird and quirky, and I loved her. She was great.
Yes, I love Hiccup Girl. I hope she becomes a regular.
I hope she is a character on Atlantis.
When they get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is actually just a big thing for General Hammond and crew to join the cast of Atlantis.
That is actually my assumption is that, like, they did. So I'm going to say, until we go back and redo, and for when we eventually go back and do Stargate Atlantis, I'm going to say, last time on, they just did a two-parter movie. Or a two-parter episode that introduced the Atlantis characters, sent them into space, and then when the show starts for real, Hammond will be there, Novak will be there. Those are going to be our Atlantis characters.
I hope so. I really appreciate crossovers like that. I mean, continuity like that.
So they get to the distress signal. It is an Alkesh, which is a variety of Gould design. SG-3 rings over to check it out.
Yeah, so we've got a spaceship, distress calls, away teams. We've gone full Star Trek.
This is full Star Trek, 100%. A Predator helm-looking fuck with a snazer is single-handedly taking over the Prometheus.
Yeah,
I was going to say, suddenly a Power Rangers villain appears.
With worse armor. Like, this is...
Somehow.
This is the
somehow worst
costume
armor
I have seen on this show.
They were definitely on the sci-fi budget at this point.
Oh, yeah. I think they borrowed some props from Kamen Rider Dragon Knight or something.
Yeah. DJ manages to hide while everyone else gets captured, showing his raw experience in avoiding capture.
Yeah, he did go full Splinter Cell last time.
He's gotten vaccinated. He's been captured so many times, he's now built up an immunity to being captured. Well, for a little bit. He does get captured this episode.
He does. I forgot about... Oh, God, the whole crew gets captured as well. Yep.
Also,
he grabs a P90 out of the armory, and I had to pause to yell about why you don't use bullets in space.
Yes.
Very bad idea to fire bullets inside of a closed atmosphere for... just hundreds of reasons. Like, we could go on. I mean, violent decompression is the least of your concerns.
Well, I actually wasn't worried about that because we see the ship take a bunch of shots from the Gould later. So I'm assuming the armor
that's all laser weapons,
is thick
though.
Enough that bullets inside, like, you have ricochet problems, but I don't think you have penetrate, go out, we're losing atmosphere problems.
Oh, well, they do have shields.
Well, but they didn't for a while, and they were just getting blasted by the gliders. But one thing, we see Dan Jax has his P90. One thing we do see, they finally added a little LED thing on the side that shoots some sort of laser beam.
He's got a laser underbarrel attachment, which is nice to see.
But Vic Jafar, I know you did competitive shotgun shooting.
Yeah.
Dan Jackson is holding this P90 like an asshole, and it made me so mad. It's like, been on this show with these specific guns for years, and no one on set is like, hey, you have to put the butt plate up against your shoulder. He's got it up over his shoulder. The second he pulls that trigger, that scope is going right into his eye. And he's down.
It's a bad day for him. Yeah. For sure.
I did like that he's got the little laser plasma attachment on the side. That was unexpected.
I was taking notes for the Who Are You movie break before we started this recording session, which is going to be Army of Darkness, which we haven't even said on Who Are You yet. So that's fun. A little preview for listeners who cross over both streams. And I had paused at the scene where Ash fires a 12-gauge shotgun and breaks a sword in half.
Oh, that was off.
I have so many problems, but I mean, the universe just does not care about its rules.
No.
But I had to just pause with raw laughter. Like, the fact to shoot a shotgun like that with a sawed-off shotgun, full extension of the arm, and to break a sword in half with an errant pellet and not hit the person behind him holding the sword?
Not going to happen.
It's pretty ridiculous,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It was ridiculous. Kind of like, it's ridiculous how everyone but Dan Jackson ends up on the other ship. He does get the jump on the Predator, only to find out that the Predator has a personal shield, and it's his turn to get got.
Yep.
He fires the laser attachment, and they're just like, fuck you. The General mentions, as he wakes up on the El Kesh, that this is an awful lot of effort from an enemy to not kill anybody. It'd be very easier for them to just run through killing everyone. As DJ wakes up zip-tied to a chair, and he finds out he's got to stay because this Predator is not a Predator, but instead...
Oh, she's a Predator,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, she's a Predator.
That, yeah, you are correct. It's fucking Claudia Black.
Other sci-fi Claudia.
Yeah, Aaron from Farscape. I was just like, fuck yeah. But DJ got to stay because he's, quote, a stone-cold hottie. I believe Farscape would have been done. I, like, did the finger math without checking for when I think Farscape ran and what season this is and what year it would have run. I didn't want to Google it because if I Google Claudia Black, I'm going to find out things I shouldn't about this show, possibly. Yeah. So I didn't, but I think this was after Farscape had finished, which means it's not a Farscape tie-in from sci-fi. But still, very excited. So is Vala, we find out her name is. She's fucking just, she's just so horny. She is.
She's horny on Main, Broadway, up down past the gas station, and you take a right on Maple. She's horny on all of them.
Real horny, yep.
You are incorrigible.
I don't know the meaning of the word.
Here with how Dan Jax is, like, he is not reciprocating the horny on Main. He never says, but I have a wife. So I'm going to say last time on Shari, what is it? God, it's been...
I can't remember it either.
It's Shari.
Shari.
Yeah. She's fucking dead, so it doesn't matter.
She's gone.
Yeah.
Sorry, Angela. I know that was just nails on a chalkboard for you. His wife, gone, so far gone, he's not even like, hey, my wife just died. I'm not in that place yet.
Yeah.
Well, we still don't know. Maybe he just, his memory is still gone. Maybe he still doesn't remember her, and no one back at SG Command has the heart to tell him.
So. Oh, hey. Running around as a system lord? Yeah.
I will say...
That's fair.
So Vala here is... We're in the early aughts, right? Timeline-wise? I think
probably.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is... There is that sci-fi late 90s, early 2000s sexy mean that shows loved to do, where it's just like... It's the same sort of thing like with the Borg Queen or
They did it on Farscape with some of the Farscape villains got sexy with their captain and shit. Yeah,
yeah, it was a weird
vibe. Yeah,
connecting into that, not I can fix her, but she can make me worse.
Yep. SG-3 works to repair the Alkesh ship, and Hammond is going to go over to the cargo ship for its jumper cable crystals.
Yep.
While Vala is trying any means necessary to get DJ to cooperate, but he does not... I'm not sure if he doesn't actually know the codes.
I think he doesn't.
Even then... because he waits for her to enter... Well, I guess she would reprogram them at that point. Or he's just really good at getting interrogated at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a... He's... Yeah. Well, again, we don't know if he's got his memories back, so maybe he's just winging it.
Yeah. I think at this point he probably does, but
he probably has muscle memory of being captured so many times at the very least. I know how this goes.
But this is absolutely I can understand this as a guy who, like, Jafar, you know a lot about computers as an IT professional. And our old co-host on Draft the Universe was also an IT professional. I use computers. I don't. I can't program anything. I can't write code. And so I felt like Dan Jacks, because sometimes you guys would be having full-blown conversations where I'm just like, I know how to Google something. I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Speaking of, did you guys see the control panels on the Prometheus here that are using the fucking those clickety clack keyboards that were that were old even in the early 2000s.
Like, yes, I made a note later. We get a little bit of a zoom in on one, and I do not wish upon anyone having to reverse engineer a PS/2 keyboard port to work with fucking crystals.
Maybe that's the only way that I'm going to say last time on. That's the only way they could get the Asgardian.
They're not USB
crystals.
Compatible.
Yeah.
No plug and play on those fucking crystals.
But we find out that Vala, Claudia Black's character, is a ex-host. Her people rose up.
She says a lot of things in this episode, and most of them aren't true.
Yeah.
So,
but this is why she was able to use the Gauld super soldier armor.
Healy bit, yeah. So... The general goes over to the cargo ship, and it is literally just the same as the Alkesh interiors, but cast in Pantone's color of the year 2265, emergency lighting red.
Yeah, we took all the lights, and now it's a different ship.
Mm-hmm.
But I did appreciate here, they said, hey, there was a firefight, they were shooting a bunch of guns, probably burned up all the oxygen in the room, you're going to have a very hard time breathing. And I'm like, that would happen.
Mm-hmm. The general also almost makes it back, but ends up being rescued by SG-3, collapsed in front of the ring. He does get the crystals into the ring.
That was badass. So that was awesome.
We learned something about the rings here, which is it is not a one-way teleport.
No.
Whatever is in one ring station will go to the other one when they are activated.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
When they send the rescue crew over, the crystals show up on the Alkesh ship.
That said,
okay, yeah,
we have this whole bit where Hammond is like going to do it because I won't ask anybody to risk their lives for something I wouldn't do, but also they have to waste a lot of time explaining to him which crystals they need, and I'm like, if you had sent Novak, she'd be back by now. She would have been like, blue one, clear one, hiccup. I can't also, hiccup here because I can't breathe.
Maybe someone younger with better lung capacity and a healthier blood oxygen rate maybe would have made it back better instead of your old ass, General Hammond.
He definitely pulls a Captain Picard there. He's like, I must do this myself.
Yeah. They get him back, and there's a moment of hesitation on this mouth-to-mouth. And I'm like, is this crewman the general's ex or something? Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if it was gay panic or if it was just, we're all so scared of the general, no one actually wants to touch him. Which,
given how outwardly pro-imperialism this show is, I have to imagine it's gay panic.
Yeah.
But in my mind, where I like to erase those things from history because they don't deserve to exist... He is the general's ex, and it is just a very awkward situation.
Well, and the reason I think it might not have been gay panic is because Novak is also just like, no, I'm not giving him mouth to mouth. And, she, you know, you know, that would at least have been the, like, hey, we can't do this, we're guys, you're the girl, you have to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say that last time on, this is not the first time Hammond has had to get mouth to mouth. And each time the other person, the person who saved his life, got promoted, but to, like, a job they hated. And so they know, like, oh man, if I save his life, like, oh man, I'll end up like leading a team. And everybody he promotes ends up dead. Like, it's a curse.
I'm in that war zone.
Yeah. Like, he's not being malicious. It's just really bad luck.
Did anyone else notice that when Harriman was saying that right before General Hammond beamed over to the other ship, Harriman gave him that long look like, yep, sir, good luck, sir.
Yep.
Like, I got some Mr. Burns Smithers vibes.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
It's just like, I felt like he wanted to say, I love you.
DJ gets free and regains control of the Prometheus, only for another Gould ship, like the one they found, to come into sensor range. Yep. Yeah. Vala gives us some backstory here about saving her dying people, etc., etc. They end up fighting, and DJ comes out ahead, but can't stop the ship from the hyperspace launch in time.
He gets his butt kicked, but shoots her after at the end.
Yeah. He waits. Because he waits for her to enter the codes so that he can take control of the ship.
No.
Because she changed them.
Because
she, yes.
No, because she...
No. He's very specific about this. He waits for her to go over to the navigation, start entering things, and enter the bypass code, and then shoots her.
No, because he was fine the entire time.
He waited.
No, he was trying to stop her. He didn't want the to go.
No, he needed her to enter the bypass codes. When she shows up, he's all like, what are the bypass codes? Because you changed them, and yes. I can't change the ship's trajectory anymore. So he actively lets her think that she has beaten him, go over to the panel, enter the codes, and then immediately shoots her before she can do anything else.
He's
very smart about this.
No, because he's not able to control the ship once he shoots her.
No, he is.
No, he's not. He goes to the planet. He can't stop them from landing. He is not in control, and he keeps trying to get the codes because she programmed it in, and he is locked out.
I feel like he waited for her to try and bypass.
I don't think he was. I don't think he's that good at
getting
his ass
kicked. He lets her enter three keystrokes and then goes. So, okay. Well, regardless.
Was this before or after Vala got the communications working and she signaled her allies or whoever?
This is after, because that's still while he's tied up. Also, it implies that she can read English. But Earth, never heard of it. English.
Well, she's speaking English.
Everybody. You know how humans are all over.
I made a note of what she said there. She said she acquired a new ship that's better, implying that the Prometheus is better than the Gua'uld ships she just left. And I'm just like, how?
It's bigger.
What? Maybe because it's bigger?
Yeah.
Is that all? Because this thing does not, there's no way this, I mean, it looks big and clunky. It's a very, the Prometheus has a very human spaceship look to it. Actually, no, it has a very American human spaceship to it. It's big.
It looks like the Nostromo to me.
Yeah.
I thought it looked like a behemoth from Starcraft.
Yeah. I thought it kind of looked like Galactica because it's got what looks to be fighter pods on each side too. But it has a very American spaceship look. Like, if this thing was built by the Japanese, it would look a hell of a lot cooler. But
for sure. My assumption, because the ship lands and there are some aliens who are trying to trade some Nequadria for the ship.
For the spaceship, yeah.
I think she is telling the truth about them. They are trapped on a moon and they're like, we've got the space fuel. Please bring us a ship big enough that we can escape. She's not actually rescuing her people. She's selling a spaceship to the people. That said, I am carrying some water for the episode where it's like, the story is true. She's just lying about her part in it.
That makes more sense, that she would be all just like, oh, I'm going to sell them this piece of crap. Since no one's ever seen it before, they'll think it's better, and then I'll go back and grab the other Gua'uld ships and then sell them on eBay for even more.
Oh, and it doesn't matter because all they care about is, will all of our people fit, not does it have good guns?
Well, Han Solo doesn't make the deal regardless.
Yeah,
and that was so Gold funny. Gliders and some Alcash show up. DJ forces Vala to help, but the ship is in a rough spot. Vala acquiesces control and then gets snazered.
I did appreciate when he lets her out of the brig, she has this giant, like, fake smile, like, hey, you're letting me out. You gotta help. I gotta help. Hey. I'm just like, okay, that's fun. Is charming. You're like, I know nobody can trust you, but I am on board with you being a character.
Yep. The general on their outcast shows up, and they're able to fight off the Gaul that had found them. The Prometheus has to return to Earth for repairs. And Vala escapes on the Alcash to credits.
We get one great moment, though. After the general and his Alcash shows up and blows up the bad guys, she's like, okay, well, you guys won. But Daniel, there's one thing you really need to know. And he just shoots her. He's like, I know you're about to lie to me. I don't even want to know what the lie is. Zap.
Zap.
And I'm just like, so good on you, DJ. Good on you.
He's experienced now, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked the scene where she helped herself to the entire snack bar on board the Prometheus.
Oh, that did make me mad, though, because there has to be some way to feed people in the brig. He did not need to bring her to the mess hall.
Yeah, just slide a banana underneath the door or something. Banana!
All right, well, that's the episode. So I'm going to roll some dice, and we'll see where we're going. But before we do that, Vic, do you have the latest results from the lab?
Let me head down to the lab. Let me send someone down there. Oh, I'm getting the results back right now.
Good job. Here we go.
Open up my envelope there.
All right.
Do you want to roll the dice first?
Nah, we'll do this. We're already here.
All right, so I have the results here. I posted this a little late, but we did manage to get 25 votes just in the past 10 hours.
All right. Lab rats.
We'll check back on this, though, since it's still pretty early. It's because our first prediction that there is no replacement for Dr. Frazier, that got 0 votes. Carrie Frazier goes off on an off-world mission, also got 0 votes. The SG-1 team gets stranded somewhere after the gate blows up. That got the most votes out of everything. That got 10, 40% of the votes. So congratulations there. That was, whose prediction was that?
Those were mine.
Yeah, good job there. So you got your 3-pointer. So far, there's only 1 point for the boxing episode.
Good. I don't want that.
4 votes, however, for Dr. Frazier Returns. Only 1 vote on the existence of aliens is finally revealed to Earth. 0 votes on Cassie becomes a villain. And 5 votes on SG-1 fights a dragon.
Cool.
I don't believe it.
I just threw that one out there, man. I didn't fight a fucking dragon, but sure. I can see it happening, actually.
Well, that puts me at 34 right now with a possibility of a couple. We've got a bonus point in the air still, and we'll get some more votes on these.
At 34 as well.
Jeez, I am lost count, but...
we can figure it out for next time.
So you two are at 30. Yeah.
Well, next time we'll go over these predictions again to see where they're at, and then also... Mm-hmm.
And I figure for when we wrap things up, we'll...
Oh, yeah, we'll just do it at wrap and go over everything. Yeah. All right. Well, it's time to roll some dice, see where we're going. That is a 14. So we're going to Season 9, Episode 6, Beachhead. And Ori Prior has established an ever-growing force field on a Jaffa-controlled planet. I don't think we've heard Ori before.
And I was going to say, an Ori Prior? What?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
That was an Ori Prior.
Well, I'm assuming Prior, like the title, somebody who's running a monastery.
P-R-I-O-R.
Yep.
Like so before. An Ori before...
Well, no, a prior is a person who runs a priory, which is a monastery.
But I thought
isn't
that was
with a Y, though?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, it doesn't matter. They can spell it however they want. It's the Ori's decision to spell it however they please.
It's the Ori. I'm going to... Okay, you know what? I'm going to... Well, I'll save it for my prediction, but I have I have a theory on what the Ori are.
Okay. I'm going to go right into my predictions.
Lincoln, what are you doing up there?
Guessing? I guess no one's coming. I have seen into
the future. You ruined the prophecy.
Daytime. We never see Vala again.
Vala never returns.
Evening. We see Vala again.
Oh, come on.
And in my prime time, we see Vala again a lot. We have 2 seasons of TV left, right? We've got about 45 episodes. I'm going to say, or 50 maybe from this point, from the episode we just watched, I'm going to say she's in more than 10 of the remaining 50 episodes.
We're, oh my God, you're right. It ends on season 10. We're getting close.
Yeah, we're making our way.
All right, yeah, we are on.
We theoretically could have 2 episodes of SG-1 left at this point. If I roll max after the next episode, I believe we will be at the end.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then do we watch?
No. We're going to have at least 2 more after the next one, mathematically speaking.
But and then do we watch the finale no matter what?
Yep.
Is that how it works? Okay, awesome.
All right.
All right. Ben, you want to go next? Do you have yours?
Sure. My daytime, Vala and DJ Bone. they go to Pound Town.
Okay.
DJ, bang it out. Okay.
My evening prediction, Hammond does end up finding the Atlantis team, but they save him.
Okay, that's a good one.
And then my prime time, it seems like out of all of the Gauld, now Ball is our big bad. They make some mentions in this that he's rampaging through space and becoming the most powerful system lord. And so my prime time is the SG crew kill Ball and make a Ball pun when they do it.
Oh, God. Like, oh, man, it took some balls to do that, didn't it?
Looks like he dropped the ball on this one. Indeed.
Okay. I just realized Carter and Teal'c were not in this episode.
Not at all.
At all. Wow.
Not even a little.
Yeah. And only O'Neill was in it a little. Okay. So I have to think up some predictions on the spot here. Somebody goes on a talk show.
Okay. Cool.
And for my evening prediction, I will say Teal'c has a family or leaves to.
No, we know that.
He does?
Yeah, he has referenced his son.
That's right, yeah.
And stuff. So we already know that. Can't have it.
Okay, Teal'c, what about his son? Teal'c's son. Damn it, his son. So Teal'c is kind of pulling a Worf here. Then he's got a son that never talks to. Hang on. I'm thinking.
Probably a better father, just statistically speaking.
Yeah. It's a low bar. Okay, Teal'c's son betrays him. And for my final primetime prediction, the Prometheus explodes.
Okay.
Bonus point if they ram it into an enemy ship.
I'll take it.
Prometheus blows up. All right.
Okay.
And I think that is it.
That is it for us today.
That is it for us today. We have done it. We do have to say thank you to Wright.
Thank you.
For letting us use the song Goon Squad as a theme. We appreciate the hell out of you. Thank you so much.
And a big thank you to everyone in the Dominion Media Research Lab for your help. We couldn't do the show without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be as much fun. And if you'd like to be a part of this, search for the Dominion Media Research Lab on Facebook and join. Or drop us a comment at lasttimeon@gmail.com. And if you like our show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Facebook, and we will give you a shout-out here on the show.
And thank you.
Also, we've got a Discord.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a Discord.
Yeah, we should talk about the Discord. Yeah, we've got a Discord you can shoot the shit with us in.
And thank you to Annette Lucina for your photograph of a television that you have licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you for making free art so we can make free art. And we will see you next time on Last Time On.
Next time, Last Time On.